Imagine a galaxy where hope is a disease and despair is the cure. In the rotting underbelly of the Imperium of Man, that idea isn't far from reality. Welcome to a world where Grandfather Nurgle the Chaos, God of Plague and Decay, extends a warm, slimy embrace to all those the Imperium has left to fester. In this cheery little tale, we'll explore how the cult of Nurgle spreads its contagion across the Imperium like an ever-growing stain, one despairing soul and one oozing plague at a time. Grab your rebreather and an extra dose of cynicism. You're going to need both. 1. The perfect petri dish. Life in the Imperium. The Imperium of Man, in all its glory, is essentially one gigantic, shabby hospital waiting room, overcrowded, miserable, and riddled with infection. Trillions of human beings toil under cruel conditions. Hive city laborers coughing in polluted air. Soldiers bleeding in trenches on forgotten moons. Families crammed into rusting hab blocks where sanitation is a distant dream. Disease is as common as sunrise. Famine, war, and poverty form the holy trinity of daily life. Hope is scarce. Fear and resignation are plentiful. It's a society eternally on the brink of collapse, held together by dogmatic faith and the brute force of the imperial regime. The authorities preach that suffering is a virtue and that the emperor will reward the faithful after death. Comfort in life? Not part of the package. If you get sick, you'll be told to pray harder. If a plague sweeps your district, you might find the area cordoned off and your pleas for aid answered only with the thunder of bolter fire as the imperial forces purge the infection, along with you and your neighbors for good measure. In short, the Imperium provides a perfect breeding ground for chaos, a truth that the ruinous powers know all too well. Enter Nurgle, also known as the Plague Lord, the Fly Father, the Lord of Decay. In the cracks of the Imperium's facade, its mass graves, its pestilent slums, its overcrowded Medicaid wards, Nurgle's infectious influence finds fertile soil. Wherever people are desperate, downtrodden, and terrified of the inevitable death that stalks them, the seeds of Nurgle's cult can take root. And in the grim darkness of the far future, that wherever is everywhere. With the scene set, let's peel back the scab and examine exactly how Nurgle's foul cult spreads across the Imperium of Man, thriving on misery and multiplying like bacteria in a wound. 2. Meet Grandfather Nurgle, hope in decay. It might seem odd to describe the universe's foulest god of pestilence as grandfatherly, but that's exactly how Nurgle's followers see him. Picture a giant, pustule-ridden being who is literally rotting alive, and yet is paradoxically jovial, even loving, toward his grandchildren. Nurgle is the chaos god of disease, decay, despair, and also rebirth. Yes, rebirth. In Nurgle's twisted philosophy, from great rot springs new life. Maggots and mold are life, after all. He is the embodiment of the fear of death and the power that fear has over mortal minds. Unlike some of his more aloof fellow chaos gods, Nurgle is intimately involved in the plight of ordinary humans. He cares, in his own nauseating way, about the little guy dying of the pox in a sump basin on some forgotten moon. Why do people turn to such a being? Desperation, pure and simple. When you're afflicted with a deadly illness, or watching your loved ones waste away, or living in filth with no hope of a better tomorrow, lofty imperial sermons about enduring in the emperor's name begin to ring hollow. The fear of an agonizing death, the slow rot of unchecked disease, these can drive even the devout to question their faith. Perhaps you've prayed to the Emperor on Terra every night as your fever worsened, and yet you only grow weaker. And then when you're at your lowest, a new whisper reaches your fevered mind. Grandfather Nurgle can save you. He can take the pain away. All you have to do is let him in. It's not a hard sell in that moment. Nurgle doesn't promise to cure your sickness. Oh no, that's not his style. Instead, he offers something more perverse. Acceptance. Embrace the rot. Stop fearing the disease and you'll find it no longer hurts you. This is the cruel trick of Nurgle's salvation. He inflicts countless diseases on his followers, but simultaneously numbs them to the pain and grants unnatural resilience. A worshipper of Nurgle becomes a walking corpse in many ways, skin covered in sores, organs liquefying, stench utterly beyond description. Yet they live on. More importantly to them, they no longer feel the agony or the dread that once consumed them. Instead, they feel a bizarre euphoria, a sense of familial warmth and joy. The despair that once gnawed at them is drowned in a narcotic haze of rot and contentment. It's as if all the self-delusion, denial, and hopelessness in a mortal's soul are twisted into comfort. A Nurgle cultist will cheerfully tell you that they've never felt better, while their eyeball is literally sliding out of its socket and friendly Nurglings, tiny demonic spawn, play in the pus pooling at their feet. They call Nurgle father or grandfather because, in their eyes, he adopted them when no one else would. It's disturbingly common to hear a plague-ridden heretic croak, "Papa Nurgle loves us all," as bullets or flamethrowers cut them down. So why do people turn? Because Nurgle gives when the Imperium only takes. The Imperial Creed demands you suffer and die nobly, maybe getting a mention in some administratum ledger as a casualty. Nurgle cheerfully says, "Suffer, sure, but enjoy it. And by the way, you don't have to die of that plague. You can live with it forever if you just stick with me." For someone at death's door, racked with pain, that offer sounds like a miracle. It's the ultimate cruel irony. The Plague Lord offers hope to the hopeless. The catch being that his hope is an eternity of decay, but at least you'll be smiling in your own delirious way. 3. Patient Zero. How cults begin. Most Nurgle cults don't start as formal organizations with recruitment drives or charismatic demagogues, at least not at first. They often germinate spontaneously in the dark, damp corners of Imperial society. The simplest scenario is this. Plague strikes a population. Perhaps it's a new, mysterious disease no Medici can cure. It might emerge naturally from squalor, or it might be deliberately introduced. A gift from Nurgle via one of his wandering agents. More on those later. Either way, you suddenly have thousands of sick and dying people, scared and abandoned. Fear and despair hang in the air as thick as the plague fumes. At first, people pray to the Emperor for deliverance. They always do. It's all they've been taught. But Imperial prayers are usually answered with silence. The Cardinal of the local Ministerium might show up to deliver a rousing sermon about martyrdom and endurance, but he's not handing out medicine, and he's definitely not staying to personally nurse the afflicted. He'll be off to the next safe, clean hive spire as soon as the platitudes leave his lips. Resentment builds. The sick languish in quarantine camps or in their own bolted shut homes, untreated and dying alone. Then comes the breaking point, that moment when a victim or a grieving family member says, either out loud or in their heart, "If the Emperor won't help us, maybe something else will." That tiny surrender, that spark of desperation, is all it takes. The Chaos Gods are always listening for cracks in a mortal's faith. Nurgle hears. Perhaps that very night, the desperate soul experiences a vivid dream despite their fever. A dream of a jovial, monstrous figure stirring a cauldron, beckoning them with open, rotted arms. Or a voice gurgles in their mind, gentle and paternal, promising relief. It's no coincidence when, the next morning, that person's pain is miraculously gone. Sure, their skin has turned a nice shade of gangrenous green, and maybe they cough up a fly or two, but they feel stronger than they have in months. The disease that was killing them is now part of them, tamed and made almost symbiotic. That is Nurgle's bargain in action. This individual, our patient zero, if you like, is now effectively the first cultist of Nurgle in that community. Immune to pain, immune, at least for now, to further harm from the plague, and filled with a grotesque gratitude to the entity that saved them, they become a zealous convert. And what do zealous converts do? They evangelize. With a newly toothy grin, some teeth might have fallen out, but never mind that, Patient Zero shuffles off to save others, spreading the good word of Grandfather Nurgle. But evangelism for Nurgle isn't done with pamphlets or holier-than-thou speeches. It's often done quite literally hand-to-hand. Picture our Patient Zero, perhaps a former factory worker or hab-wife, shambling back into the quarantine zone they were barred from leaving. Everyone else is still groaning in pain, but this one's strangely chipper. They kneel beside a dying neighbor and, with an unsettling tenderness, hold their hand or caress their face. Maybe they even give them a reassuring kiss on the brow. It's almost sweet, except that the touch all but guarantees the neighbor will soon receive Nurgle's gift as well. In the cult of Nurgle, sharing is caring takes on a deadly literal meaning. Sometimes the spread is even less personal. In many cases, early cultists, knowingly or unknowingly, contaminate resources to spread sickness. Water supplies, food rations, ventilation systems in hive spires. All have been points of infection in documented cases of Nurglite cult activity. A single infected worker in a promethium refinery can drop a few pieces of rotten flesh into the worker's drinking cistern, and bam, by week's end, the entire facility's staff is coughing up black mucus and begging for salvation. We've even heard of Nurgle cultists posing as Good Samaritans, setting up little pop-up clinics in slum areas, offering free vaccinations or immune boosters during a plague. Only the syringes are filled with tainted filth that ensures everyone inoculated joins the club of contagion. It's a particularly insidious trick. Victims think they're being cured, only to find the cure was the final push into Nurgle's arms. No matter the exact method, the pattern is the same. The disease spreads, physically and psychologically. For each new person caught in the plague who reaches that breaking point of despair and gives in, the cult gains another member. Some never consciously realize they've sworn themselves to Nurgle. They might just slip into a delirium and awaken as mindless plague zombies. More on those shambling horrors soon. But others do understand, at least partially. They feel Grandfather's presence, and they willingly start praising his name for the mercy he showed them. And so, in a dank basement or a quarantined hab block, a few infected souls begin to gather. They share their experiences, marveling that they no longer hurt, showing off ghastly wounds with pride. "Look, I can see my own rib cage, and it doesn't even sting." They laugh. Actually laugh amidst the rot. What was once a group of despairing patients becomes the nucleus of a new Nurgle cult cell. No formal indoctrination needed. Their own suffering was the initiation ritual. 4. The contagion of faith and flesh. As the cult takes shape, two parallel contagions race one another: the spread of disease and the spread of belief. In Nurgle's case, these are virtually one and the same. Every cultist is a walking vector, after all. The cult's most powerful recruitment tool is the plague itself. It's hard to overstate this, unlike, say, a Tsintshi cult that grows by secret promises of knowledge, or a Slaanesh cult that lures with pleasure. Nurgle's cult spreads biologically. Consider the zombie plague, also poetically called the Curse of Unbelief. This warp-born abomination is one of Nurgle's favorite toys. It doesn't spread by normal biology. Oh no, that would be too tame. This delightful bug can infect a person via despair. Yes, you read that right. If you lose all hope and give up on life, you're effectively inviting the zombie plague to dinner. In the grinding misery of the Imperium, plenty of folks fit that description. The disease kills them slowly and painfully. Fevers, organ failure, the works. And then, as soon as they die, it reanimates their corpses into gibbering, hungry undead. These plague zombies shamble around biting people, and one bite is enough to doom the victim to the same fate. You can see how this goes. Despair breeds infection. Infection breeds zombies. Zombies cause more despair. Have you ever watched your neighbors get torn apart by former loved ones? It's not great for morale. And thus more despair births yet more infection. It's a vicious cycle only Nurgle could love. At its height, a zombie plague is practically an instant cult of Nurgle in itself, albeit a mindless one. Whole hive city levels can be overrun by moaning hordes of the walking dead. Imperial authorities have a lovely protocol for such occasions. Burn everything. Propaganda Vox speakers blare. Attention citizens, beware the zombie plague. All deceased must be burned within 6 minutes of death to prevent reanimation. 6 minutes. If Grandma passes in her sleep, you better chuck her body in an incinerator before you finish mourning, or she might get up and try to eat you. That's everyday life when Nurgle comes to town. While zombies themselves aren't exactly organizing prayer meetings or praising Nurgle, they're a bit too preoccupied with the whole gnaw flesh imperative. The effect they have on survivors is key. Sheer terror and hopelessness set in as people witness an undead apocalypse. Those who don't succumb to bites might succumb to despair, which, cruelly, could make them fertile soil for other Nurgle infections, or tempt them to consciously call out for any power to save them. Picture an Imperial citizen barricaded in their hab, hearing the scratching of zombie nails outside, whispering a desperate plea, "Emperor, save me. Someone save me." And guess who answers the call when the Emperor's busy on his golden throne? A jovial voice whispering promises of safety from the horrors outside, if only you open the door and let him in. Next thing you know, the door opens and out comes a newly enlightened cultist, ready to meet the zombies with open arms and join Nurgle's happy family. It's darkly poetic. Those who utterly lose hope in the Imperium become Nurgle's playthings one way or another. Not all Nurgle plagues create literal zombies. There are countless diseases in his arsenal. Some mundane in symptoms, some nightmare fuel. The so-called Nurgle's rot is perhaps the most infamous. It's a supernatural disease that combines the worst symptoms imaginable, a concoction of every plague known to man, and then some. Victims of Nurgle's rot wither over a course of days or weeks, becoming bloated, rotting corpses in progress, until mercifully they die. But merciful isn't in Nurgle's vocabulary. Upon death, the victim's soul is claimed by Nurgle and reborn as a new plague-bearer demon in his realm. Yes, the poor sap literally becomes a demon of Nurgle after death. Talk about a conversion experience. Understandably, the Inquisition doesn't take kindly to even a rumor of Nurgle's rot showing up. They have, on multiple occasions, responded with the nuclear option, declaring exterminatus on an entire planet at the mere confirmation that Nurgle's rot is present. Killing billions to snuff out one plague, the Imperium's version of aggressive medical intervention. It's the equivalent of burning down a city because one house has termites. The cruel comedy, of course, is that mass death by exterminatus only feeds the chaos gods in other ways. But the Imperium's not known for its subtlety or foresight. Between zombie curses and soul-devouring rot, Nurgle's repertoire is endlessly creative. Poxes, agues, fevers, fluxes, buboes that grow legs and skitter off. If you can imagine a disease, Nurgle has crafted a more disgusting version of it, brewed in his cosmic cauldron, with a little help from his captive goddess of healing. Yes, he actually keeps the Eldar goddess of life, Isha, as a lab rat to test new plagues on. Truly a lovely fellow. Each plague is a tool to weaken a population's body and spirit, softening them up for conversion. When an entire city is burning with fever and fear, Nurgle's hand is at work stirring the pot. 5. Gathering in the shadows. Cults take shape. So far, we've been talking about mostly the unintentional side of things, people stumbling into Nurgle's grasp out of despair. But what about the more organized side of the cult? Yes, at some point, as the infection spreads, those who have embraced Nurgle often form a more structured cult, or as structured as Nurgle's easygoing philosophy ever gets. They start recognizing each other. Not hard when you all share similar boils and that signature smell of week-old carcass. They may start meeting intentionally, not just by chance. And if they're lucky, or unlucky, they might attract the attention of a champion or a sorcerer devoted to Nurgle who can lead them. Early on, secrecy is key. While Nurgle himself isn't the subtlest deity, rotting plagues aren't exactly low-key, his cultists do understand that the longer the Imperials remain ignorant, the more time the disease has to spread. So they hide in plain sight or in plain filth, as the case may be. Many Nurglite cults literally go underground. The sewers, the ventilation ducts, the sump ponds beneath hive cities. These are natural havens for disease and decay, places even the dutiful Adeptus Arbites, Imperial law enforcement, hesitate to wade into. If you have a whole stretch of sewer tunnels where the walls are coated in luminescent slime, and the air spores give you flesh-eating cough in an hour. Well, that's basically a ready-made Nurgle temple. No upstanding Imperial citizen will go near it, which makes it perfect for secret gatherings of the rot worshippers. In some cases, cults form within hospitals, hospices, and quarantine zones, the very places meant to treat disease. Think about it. A Medicai facility in a plague outbreak is full of the sick and dying. Overworked nurses, terrified patients, a few arbitrators outside making sure no one leaves. But inside, despair rules. A head orderly or doctor who's lost too many patients might snap and decide to try something unorthodox, like praying to Nurgle. Or a patient group in the hospice wing might collectively decide the Emperor has abandoned them. The cult coalesces in such forgotten wards, performing little rituals under the very noses of the medical staff. Or with the medical staff. Before long, the hospice is less a place of healing and more a chapel of contagion. By night, perhaps, the afflicted gather in the basement, in the dark, forming a circle as one of their number. The one with the loudest, wheeziest voice leads them in a hymn to decay. They might chant things like, "Blessed be the boil and the canker, praise to the fly lord." It sounds insane to a healthy mind, but to them it's comfort. What's truly dark is that often no one notices these transformations until it's far too late. Imperial officials are usually busy elsewhere. They're not monitoring what a bunch of plague victims are muttering about in a locked quarantine hab. By the time they realize an entire district has essentially gone Nurgle, the cult is firmly rooted. 6. The face, or rotting mask, of the cult. As a Nurgle cult grows, it may take on an identity, a name, symbols, even leadership. Let's talk about that. Many Chaos cults have a charismatic leader or figurehead, and Nurgle's are no exception. though charisma in a Nurgle cult leader is often of the unconventional variety, oozing charisma, one might say. Some are raving demagogues, others are actually soft-spoken paternal types. One notable archetype is the Plague Priest, or Pox Prophet, someone who considers it their holy mission to spread Nurgle's gospel and infections far and wide. This individual might carry a staff festooned with dangling skulls and flies, and their once white medici robe now stained green and brown. They preach that Nurgle's love is the only truth, that the Emperor's promises are lies. Given how the Emperor's servants have treated these people, quarantining them, shunning them, sometimes firebombing their homes, it's not hard to sway the crowd with that message. Some cults even manage to recruit healthy individuals, especially among the downtrodden who haven't gotten sick yet but see the writing on the wall. For example, a hive ganger who notices that the plague is killing all his rivals, but those weird cult guys in the sewer seem immune might decide, huh, switching teams might be smart. Or a parent with a sick child might join purely to try to save their kid. Nurgle cultists will gladly baptize the child in pestilent slime, potentially turning the kid into a plague-bearer host. But from the parent's view, at least the child isn't dead. Priorities get weird when you're that desperate. Visually and behaviorally, as time goes on, Nurgle cultists tend to look ever more inhuman. Early on, it might just be a few lesions hidden under clothes and a sickly complexion. They might still mingle in society to spread the infection quietly. But once they've truly embraced Nurgle's gifts, hiding becomes difficult. Tumors bulge, limbs distort, the stink is unbearable. Many cultists stop even trying to pass as normal and instead revel openly in their hideous form when among their brethren. They decorate their bodies with Nurgle's symbol, three circles in a triangle, reminiscent of a fly or buboes, sometimes carved or branded right into their necrotic flesh. If they still wear clothing or armor, it's often draped in pale green, brown, or rusty orange hues of decay. And always, always there are flies buzzing around them, or in their pockets, like beloved pets. One might think these walking plague bags would be miserable, but in fact they are often giddily happy in their own sick way. It's common during cult ceremonies for them to engage in grotesque celebrations, a feast, where they literally consume rotten offal as a sacrament, or a dance, where they wobble and jig to the wet thrum of bloated flies. The Lexicanum mentions crazed Nurglite revelers dancing endlessly in some cursed places. Such scenes are both disgusting and oddly tragic. These were once normal people, now reduced to carrion eaters cavorting amidst filth, laughing as if at some grand joke only they get. The grand joke, of course, is on them, but they don't see it that way. Leadership and outside influence. Many cults remain somewhat small scale, a few dozen, maybe a few hundred cultists in one locale. But sometimes, if a cult gets big enough, or if fate is particularly unkind, they'll attract heavier attention. By that I mean a Chaos Space Marine warband or demon might get involved. For instance, the Death Guard. Nurgle's dedicated Space Marine Legion of Traitors love nothing more than finding a budding cult on a world. They may have planted the seeds themselves via sorcerers, spreading new diseases. Famous Death Guard like Typhus, the Herald of Nurgle, literally roam the stars, deliberately seeding worlds with contagion. If a world's population is sufficiently softened by plague and civil unrest, the Death Guard might descend in force to turn a mere cult outbreak into a full-blown planetary war of corruption. Even without Astarte's involvement, a cult that has festered long enough might try to bring forth demonic help on their own. There are accounts of cult magi performing rituals at the height of a plague, Imagine a congregation of hundreds of plague victims in the grand cathedral of a city, the healthy priests having long since fled or been killed. Under the greenish glow of pus-filled candles, they sacrifice a few healthy captives, got to add some blood to please Khorne's onlooking, jealous gaze. But just a token amount, this is Nurgle's show after all. They chant, they ring bells made of cracked bone, they call out to Nurgle, and with a tearing of reality and a waft of indescribable stench, a great unclean one, Nurgle's greater demon, heaves its gargantuan, warty form into real space. Now the cult's little party has a guest of honor, an almost comically jovial demon that resembles a mountain of sludge given life, wheezing laughter and ready to hug the entire city to death. If things reach that stage, the cult isn't in the shadows any longer. It's running the show. The planet is in deep, deep trouble. 7. The plague goes galactic. While many cults burn out or get stamped out locally, Nurgle's corruption often doesn't stay confined to one unlucky hab block. Thanks to the marvels of interstellar travel and human negligence, plagues can hitch rides between worlds. The Imperium's vast merchant and transport fleet, the pilgrim ships carrying millions to Holy Terra, the black ships, the Astra Militarum troop conveyances, all are potential vectors for spreading Nurgle's gifts far and wide. Picture a scenario: a single Nurgle cultist, let's call him Traveling Terry, has to flee his planet because the Inquisition showed up to purge the cult. Terry, being an enterprising fellow with a trench coat big enough to hide his more egregious tentacles, buys passage on a warp freighter heading to the next sector. He might have to bribe the port officials or slip in with a mass of refugees. Unbeknownst to anyone, his body is a breeding ground of infection. Maybe he carries one of Nurgle's slow-burn plagues that doesn't show symptoms immediately. During the voyage, some people notice an odd smell around Terry, but in the grimy confines of a void ship, who isn't a bit smelly? By the time the ship docks at its destination, dozens of passengers and crew are incubating a nice new plague strain they caught from our friend. They disembark across multiple cities. A week later, those ports of call are suddenly dealing with mysterious outbreaks. And off we go again. Interplanetary traffic ensures contagious diseases are carried from world to world by the ignorant, the willful, and the strong. The Imperium's own networks become the arteries through which Nurgle's contagion flows. It's darkly humorous. The bureaucracy will scrutinize travelers for heretical pamphlets or mutant deformities, but a little cough? Hardly a reason to ground a ship, until that cough becomes a system-wide pandemic. War is another great vehicle. The Imperial Guard, Astra Militarum, trudges from battle zone to battle zone, often packed in tight transport ships with poor hygiene. A plague that starts in one regiment can wipe out half the soldiers by the time they warp travel to reinforce another front, potentially introducing the sickness to a whole new war zone and planet. The Chaos Guards love this, by the way. During the infamous 14th Black Crusade, and many others, Death Guard sorcerers strategically unleashed plagues right as conflicts peaked. One moment, the Imperial defense lines are holding. The next, men are collapsing at their posts as Nurgle's pox riddles their bodies. On some worlds near warp rifts or the Great Rift, the massive galaxy-wide tear in reality that happened recently, entirely new diseases have emerged that laugh at the laws of nature. They spread via nightmares, or via the psychic malaise of despair itself. How do you even quarantine a bad dream? The Imperium's answer: you don't. You just burn the bodies in the morning and carry on, hoping it doesn't spread further. It's a losing game. 8. Infiltration and treachery. Not all Nurgle cults are made up solely of the poor, sick masses. Some are a bit more elitist in origin. there have been high-profile cases of Nurgle worship among Imperial officials, nobles, even Adeptus members. Their reasons can vary. Perhaps a planetary governor contracts a degenerative illness. Too much life-extending juvenile treatment gone wrong, maybe. And terrified of his impending mortality, he secretly bargains with Nurgle for a stay of execution. He might outwardly appear fine spry, even, while in truth his body is a maggot-ridden shell animated by Nurgle's will. He'll hide the truth with concealing clothes and perhaps a touch of warp glamour to mask the smell. Under his rule, policies change subtly. The Medicaid funding gets slashed. Can't have those pesky doctors curing things Nurgle wants to spread. The city's sewers mysteriously stop being maintained. Gee, wonder why he'd want stagnant filth down there. Bit by bit, he engineers an environment where disease will thrive. By the time his subjects realize something is wrong, half the population is vomiting bile, and the governor's mansion has become a grotesque shrine where he communes with a minor demon for further instructions. Another case? Consider the cult of Amber on the world of Unctuous, which managed to endure for millennia in secret. This cult believed in stagnation. They thought the Imperium's pace of progress, which is laughable, slow to begin with, was still too fast. They infiltrated the planet's highest ranks. Politicians, PDF officers, bureaucrats, all committed to keeping their society frozen, unchanging, a perfect stagnant pool for Nurgle. Their slogan could have been "Make our planet great again" by never changing anything. Through their influence, innovation was stifled, infrastructure decayed, accidentally on purpose, and the world became beautifully decrepit over centuries. Eventually, the cult's leader, an administratum bigwig named Antonin Thrax, launched a full-on coup and ritual to summon the Lord of Amber. Spoiler, that was just Nurgle in a fancy hat. The result? Nurgle's power manifested, and the entire planet's population was reduced to piles of bones within moments. Thrax himself got a promotion for his efforts, turned into a demon prince called Anathrax the Foetid, while everyone else on that world became a dusty footnote in Nurgle's grand experiment. Only a timely intervention by Nurgle's rival, Tzinch, always photobombing other gods' parties, prevented the contagion from spilling to neighboring worlds. That story shows how a patient, infiltration-based cult can operate. Quietly at first, even preaching something seemingly mundane like, "Conserve our traditions." Hardly sounding like a chaos slogan, but leading to a sudden terminal event when they're ready. It doesn't always have to be literal germs doing the early work. It can be bureaucratic rot, societal stagnation, spiritual disease preceding the physical. Nurgle is decay in all forms. Of course, not every cult has a centuries-long master plan. Some are more opportunistic. Say a warband of Nurgle-aligned Chaos Marines is planning to attack a planet. They'll often have cult agents or sleeper cells prepare the ground in advance. A few corrupted locals might tamper with the orbital defense grid or slip poison into the food silos to weaken the population. They may even deliberately infect themselves with something vile and then let themselves be captured by Imperial authorities who unwittingly throw them in a holding area with others, where the plague can start to spread behind the lines. By the time the main invasion hits, the defenders might be contending with fever and hallucinations, their last guns slipping from sweat-soaked hands. A delightful advantage from the plague lord's perspective. 9. Discovery and outbreak. Sooner or later, most Nurgle cults get discovered by the authorities, usually because by that point, things have spiraled into a full-blown crisis that can no longer be ignored. Hard to hide a few thousand people chanting to Dark Gives while a million others scream in pain from the latest super plague. When that moment comes, the cult often drops any pretense and goes loud. If you've been secretly praying to a god of pestilence and your cover's blown, you don't exactly try to talk your way out of it in a court of law. You riot. A typical late-stage Nurgle cult uprising might look like this. The PDF, Planetary Defense Force, or local enforcers get orders to raid a certain district, say the Sump Scrap Quarter, where infection rates have been off the charts. They go in, masks on, flamers lit, expecting to find maybe some hapless sick folks and a few cult ringleaders. Instead, the walls themselves seem to come alive with slime. Molds and funguses sprout everywhere, almost responding to the intruders. Then, out of the gloom shamble the cultists in force. Some are still half-human in shape. Others have become mutated beyond recognition. Slug-like lower bodies, arm tentacles, heads bloated 3 times normal size, buzzing with flies. They rush, or oozingly advance, toward the authorities in a frenzied mob. Bullets and las fire tear into the cultists, but the heretics just laugh even as limbs are blown off. They feel no pain, remember. Many won't even die easily. A cultist might take a point-blank shotgun blast to the chest, collapse, and a minute later get back up, because, hey, unless you completely dismember or incinerate them, Nurgle's diseases will keep the body going. Meanwhile, the defenders start noticing things are off with themselves. A trooper's vision blurs. He thinks it's just nerves until he coughs and blood splatters inside his rebreather mask. Another finds her hands shaking uncontrollably, lesions appearing on her arms. The very air is poison now, filled with virulent spores pumped out by the cult's presence. Panic sets in among the ranks of the healthy, and panic, as we've learned, only strengthens Nurgle. The battle becomes a nightmare. In such chaos, cultists may perform bold acts, some charge forward simply trying to hug the enemy. It's almost comical, except that hug will likely infect the victim horrifically. There are often reports of cultists deliberately letting themselves be shot near clusters of soldiers so that their ruptured bodies can spray tainted blood and pus as a human sprinkler of disease. At this stage, they are beyond fear. They want to drag as many as possible with them into Grandfather's embrace. If a demonic summoning or warp ritual is underway, all this fighting is just buying time until it completes. If they manage to summon Nurgle's lesser demons, you'll suddenly see Nurglings, mischievous little pustule gremlins swarming the feet of the cultists, or plague-bearers, gaunt, one-eyed demons, plodding alongside the human cultists as if they were long-lost cousins. The sky might turn a sickly green as reality thins, and a rain of filth begins pattering down, spreading yet more sickness. It can escalate to apocalyptic levels very quickly. 10. The Imperial Response. Cleanse with fire and more fire. The Imperium is nothing if not predictable in its response to heresy and outbreak. Kill it, burn it, bury it, then kill it again, just to be sure. Once a Nurgle cult is exposed, the authorities move into full extermination mode. But how exactly do you fight an enemy that wants to share a lethal infection with you? Extremely carefully or extremely recklessly, depending on the commander's temperament. At the local level, enforcers and PDF units resort to heavy weapons and flamethrowers. Flamers are beloved in these scenarios. Nothing purifies like holy Promethean fire, after all. Whole city blocks might be set ablaze just to ensure every spore and corpse is thoroughly cooked. It's a given that anyone even suspected of infection will be summarily executed or quarantined, which often amounts to the same thing, just slower. Medicai personnel, if they're brave, might try to save uninfected civilians and treat the sick. But by this stage, cures are basically fairy tales. More often, the medical solution is a bolter round to the head to prevent reanimation. The Inquisition usually shows up if the situation isn't resolved in hours. One particular ordo was founded for these scenarios, the Ordo Sepulturum, dedicated to investigating and eliminating chaos plagues and the walking dead. If you see an inquisitor with a rebreather mask, etched with silver skulls and a flamer in hand, you know it's gotten really bad. Inquisitors have at their disposal tools like virus bombs, ironically fighting plague with an even more deadly manufactured plague. Delivered via orbital strike, it can sterilize all life in a biosphere within minutes. They won't hesitate to use such measures if a planet seems lost. Better the innocent burn than the guilty thrive, they might intone as they glass an entire continent from orbit. The moral calculus is grim but simple to them. One world lost is better than a sector-wide pandemic. If the cult uprising is part of a larger chaos invasion, the Imperium might counter with military force, sending in elite kill teams like Space Marines or the Adepta Sororitas, Sisters of Battle. These forces are highly resistant to disease. Space Marines have superhuman physiology and power armor with sealed environments. Sisters have faith that can miraculously ward off corruption most of the time. Still, even the mighty Astartes have fallen to Nurgle's plagues in the past, the entire Death Guard Legion being case in point. They were super soldiers, and Nurgle's rot turned them inside out until they capitulated. So the fighting is brutal, but Space Marines have one advantage. They don't scruple to kill infected innocents if it means stopping the spread. They will purge entire hives, street by street, flamer and chains ored in hand, leaving piles of ash that used to be people, all to save the planet. It's a dark salvation, but sometimes it works. Sometimes the world pulls back from the brink, though scarred forever by the losses. Quarantine is another tactic, albeit one that often condemns those within. There have been instances where the Imperial Navy simply blockade a plague planet, declaring it perdita, lost. No one in, no one out. Let whatever's happening down there burn itself out. This could take years, decades, or never. But the wider Imperium moves on, writing off billions of lives. Case example. On Hydra Minoris, when the zombie plague first appeared, the Navy quarantined the world, trapping 23 billion uninfected people alongside the growing undead hordes. 23 billion potential casualties left to fate, because letting even one refugee out could carry the curse to another world. Those are the awful stakes when dealing with Nurgle's touch. From the cult's perspective, facing the Imperial response is almost a win-win in their corrupted minds. If they lose, that is, get killed, they believe Nurgle will reward them after death. Their souls might join his garden, maybe even become demons frolicking in eternal filth. If they win and manage to overthrow Imperial control, they get to enjoy their plague-ridden paradise a while longer, and possibly export it further. And even if the Imperium resorts to Exterminatus and wipes out everyone, well, that's still a whole lot of death and decay, which feeds chaos and pleases Nurgle mightily. It's grim to say, but by the time a cult is in open rebellion, there are few happy endings available. 11. Aftermath and persistence. Suppose the cult and the outbreak are eventually crushed. What then? The survivors, if any, emerge into a world utterly changed. Perhaps 90% of the population is dead or dying. Cities might lie silent but for the buzzing of flies on mountains of corpses. The air could be toxic for years from the fumes of decay. The infrastructure is shattered. It's a vision of hell, frankly. The Imperium's likely response: send some cleanup crews to burn the rest. Maybe an ecclesiarchy mission to reconsecrate the ground, if they're feeling particularly spiritual. Then ship in a few million fresh colonists or laborers from somewhere else to repopulate and get the tithes flowing again. Life, such as it is, goes on. Though generations might whisper about the time the plague demons came in terrified hush. But crucially, Nurgle's shadow never fully departs. Even on a purged world, some spores may linger. Perhaps a single carrier managed to hide and survive, going dormant until the Navy left, then starting the cycle anew decades later. Or maybe the very psychic trauma of the event leaves a stain. People report increased illnesses or a persistent malaise in the region for centuries. A subtle curse. Chaos has a way of cropping back up like particularly stubborn mold. In the grander scheme, the cult of Nurgle is like a multi-headed weed across the galaxy. You cut down one, another sprouts elsewhere. At any given time, countless Nurgle cults are likely simmering under the surface on Imperial worlds. Many will die out on their own, if, say, an outbreak is contained early or local authorities are both competent and lucky. But many more will reach critical mass at some point. The Imperium is vast and cannot monitor every backwater agri-village or every overcrowded underhive. And since the fundamental problems of the Imperium, oppression, poverty, disease, war, aren't going away, indeed, the Imperium often makes them worse in its quest to fight them, Nurgle's cult will always find new footholds. In fact, with the current state of the galaxy, in M42, after the Great Rift split reality apart, Nurgle's power is on the rise. Reality itself is a bit frayed, making it even easier for warp-born diseases to slip through, and for demons to piggyback on pandemics. The Death Guard Traitor Legion rampages across Imperial space in plague fleets, turning war zones into charnel houses of contagion. Entire star systems have been quarantined or lost to blooming plagues that move faster than the Administratum's reports can travel. One could say the cult of Nurgle isn't just spreading in the Imperium. It's spreading throughout the Imperium like never before. 12. The Appeal of Rot, a sarcastic summary. Let's take a step back and appreciate the situation with a bit of dry humor, as dry as one can be while talking about moist, wet plagues. Why is it, fundamentally, that the cult of Nurgle spreads so well in the Imperium? Because the Imperium creates the perfect conditions for it, and then acts surprised when it bites them. It's like watching someone continually dump garbage behind their house and then scream in horror when rats show up. The Imperium dumps literal and metaphorical garbage everywhere. Draconian policies that keep most of the population in squalor, an uncaring approach to humanitarian issues, and a refusal to address systemic problems, since suffering is just the Emperor testing you, citizen. People are taught to fear death terribly, because if you die with even a sliver of doubt, you might doom your soul quite the stress to live under, and simultaneously they're given next to no quality of life. Nurgle's essentially thinking, well, if you're going to treat your people like human compost, I might as well grow some lovely cults in that mulch. And grow they do. The cult of Nurgle, in a perverse way, offers the galaxy's most downtrodden something the Imperium often fails to provide. Solace. Twisted, deadly solace, but solace nonetheless. It provides community. We're all rotting together, friend. It provides an explanation for their suffering. Grandfather is testing us, gifting us. And it even provides a kind of grotesque joy. Let's laugh as our flesh falls off, for we are beyond pain. In the theater of dark absurdity that is Warhammer 40K, the cult of Nurgle is tragically understandable. 13. Conclusion. Inevitability of decay. In the end, the spread of Nurgle's cult in the Imperium is as inevitable as entropy itself. As long as billions live in fear and misery, as long as every human heart harbors the unspoken dread of illness and death, Nurgle will have a foot in the door, or rather a rot in the wound. The cult of Nurgle is not an external invader, but a symptom of the Imperium's own decay. It is the shadow cast by the heart of mankind, which knows that all things, empires, bodies, faith, eventually crumble to dust and mold. Grandfather Nurgle, with a malign twinkle in his rheumy eye, simply helps the process along. From the hives of Necromunda to the spires of Sacred Terra herself, no world is truly safe from the creeping scourge. It slithers through the pipes, wafts on the air, hides in a hopeful prayer turned to despair. It only takes one moment of surrender, one lost soul crying out for any help, and Nurgle will come, bearing his gifts. And so, with a rueful smile, and perhaps a cautious squirt of hand sanitizer, we conclude, in the grim darkness of the far future, there is no escape from decay. The cult of Nurgle will spread and fester so long as life itself endures. Because to live is to suffer is to fear, and in fear lies the seed of corruption. The Imperium of Man may fight this truth with flame and faith, but entropy is patient, and rot always finds a way. In the end, every fortress of man becomes a tomb, and every idol of hope eventually rusts. The cult of Nurgle is simply there to cheer along the process, spreading its corruption with a joyous, pus-filled laugh. In the silent aftermath, when all the prayers have faltered and only the flies bear witness, one truth remains. Decay claims all, and Grandfather Nurgle will be waiting with open arms.